Recently, there has been high-level negotiations between United States intelligence officials and military authorities in Afghanistan. Officials from Pakistan's Inter-Service Intelligence Agency and the Taliban leadership. The negotiations take place as a guerrilla war waged against the heavy U.S. presence in Afghanistan, and influence over the current Afghani administration grows by the day. The United States is simply being forced to sit at the negotiating table with the Taliban leadership and religious clerics to attempt to fill the power vacuum which currently exists in Afghanistan. A power vacuum which is driving the growing guerrilla war against the United States' presence in the country and their puppet administration holding political power in Afghanistan. I spoke with Pakistani journalist Saeed Salim Shahzad, writer for The Asia Times, about the current negotiations between the Taliban, United States military and intelligence officials, and the Pakistani Inter-Service Intelligence Agency.
When we say that conversation is going on, that doesn't mean that it is going on in a very organized manner. What my sources said and what I have gathered from different other sources, basically Pakistani ISI and the US authorities were looking for somebody who could replace the present power vacuum in Afghanistan, especially in Pashtun belt. So they were trying hard to bring in some old factions like old warlords and other people to replace the powerful Taliban movement. Although they were thrown away in 2001, but politically they are still a powerful force. So after making a lot of hectic efforts, they tried to make their inroads through Pakistani-based jihadi organizations, and they got in touch finally from few of their leaders in Afghanistan, and they conveyed the message to the Taliban movement that if they compromise on few points, including the removal of Mullah Omar, and they threw away the foreign fighters like Al-Qaeda, and fighters from other countries, like from Chechnya and from Pakistan and other countries. And there were a few other points. There are possibilities that U.S. authorities would help to induct Taliban. Taliban means religious students or the clerics, religious clerics. So they would help to induct these elements in the Karzai administration. This was all about I have gathered from my sources.
Recently, there is what many people are calling a renewed guerrilla war against the presence of American troops in Afghanistan. Could you speak about what is going on with this growing resistance to the American presence in Afghanistan and how that relates to these negotiations which you're talking about?
Well, basically, this guerrilla resistance was the main reason why U.S. authorities were forced to sit and talk to the elements which they thrown away in 2001. This resistance movement basically is going on mostly in the Pashtun belt, especially in Kandahar, in Helmand area, in Shakin, Ghazni, Logar, and even in Kabul and near about, and especially in the outskirts of Kabul. And this is very powerful. I mean, in 1979, when USSR invaded Afghanistan, Afghans resisted the invasion, but the intensity was not of that level, I mean, what it is being witnessed at present. At that time, what I have read in the books and what I have talked to the senior most correspondents who covered the Afghan war during USSR invasion period, they told that there used to be guerrilla attacks in 1 month, but at present, every day, U.S. forces, U.S. and allied forces, face at least 2-3 attacks in a day. Sometimes in one district, like Helmand, especially in Helmand and Zabul, these are the hotbeds. And even in Zabul, which is near Pakistani border, basically there is no left of Karzai administration in that area. Even in Kandahar, the governor and its bureaucracy and its cabinet members cannot go out from their official buildings without having the U.S. forces and escort them. I mean, this is the situation on ground, which shows that the guerrilla movement is in full swing and the Hwan society is completely destabilized.
Let's look at the situation of the quote-unquote Afghani leadership presently. When the United States invaded Afghanistan after September 11th, there was a presentation made to the world that this invasion was going to bring democracy to Afghanistan. It was going to bring civil rights to Afghanistan and Afghani people. Can you speak about the kind of U.S.-led leadership which exists to some degree in Afghanistan? You mentioned that much of the leadership cannot leave the official buildings without heavy U.S. protection. Are they actually playing any role in the political landscape of the country at this point?
They can't. Simply they can't. Because, you know, United States of America, in its mere arrogance, refused to admit few ground realities, that the Pashtuns are the main force in the politics, in Afghan politics. And the U.S. authorities had their own arrogance. Even if they go after Taliban regime in 2001, they also go after some other Pashtun warlords or Pashtun leaders like Gulbuddin Hikmatyar. I mean, Gulbuddin Hikmatyar used to be the one, and everybody remembers that Hikmatyar was the one who was the major recipient of CIA's aid, weaponry aid and other aids back in early 80s and mid 80s. And after in the late 80s, he was branded by the West, especially by the Americans, as a fundamentalist. Before that, although everybody remembers that he was the most favorite of U.S. authorities in early 80s and until mid 80s, but what transpired in between nobody knows, and that why he was branded as a fundamentalist and hardliner. Then, and even though he had differences with Taliban regime, also he took refuge in Iran, but U.S. forces forced Iran to expel him. So This kind of arrogance forced Gulbuddin Hikmatyar to left Iran and stepped in Afghanistan and join hands with Taliban movement and forge an alliance to resist U.S. and allies forces. Had Americans made a wise decision and and engage people like Gulbuddin Hikmatyar and other people in dialogue, they would have been succeeded to form a good coalition representing the majority of the Pashtun population and would have been replaced Taliban. But instead, they go for hardline actions. For instance, they arrested even their political spokesman in Pakistan, Dr. Ghairat Bahir, which completely choked all the routes for dialogue. Now they are at this point, when they, as you said, that they have been propagating Taliban as in evil elements, and now they are forced to use backdoors to have dialogue with the same regime people.
Now, in this dialogue that is happening currently, do you see there being any type of end result? Obviously, Afghanistan is not as much in the limelight as compared to a year ago or during the bombing. But at the same time, there still remains a large American presence on the ground in the country, and of course a lot of American influence as to the political landscape. Where do you see these negotiations going, and where do you see America's role on the ground in Afghanistan going?
What I foresee is that U.S. would finally be compelled for this kind of negotiation, but U.S. has to realize the ground realities of Afghan society. When they blame Taliban for hardline things and their religious extremism, they have to realize that it is not a new phenomenon. It is centuries-old phenomenon in Afghan society. And Afghan people, they were very much used to with these sort of traditions and these sort of things. So U.S. authorities has to realize the ground realities in Afghanistan. And because, you know, the dynamics of the region is also going to change. And previously, Taliban has differences with Iran and other neighboring countries. But today, when Iran is in the limelight and U.S. aims to destabilize the religious clergy, which is in power in Iran, now there is every possibility that the two regimes, the former Taliban regime and the present Irani clergy, which is in power, may join hands with each other and restore some supply lines for to help each other for the same cause, which is to damage the U.S. interest in the region. So U.S. United States authorities should realize the ground realities. They should not be an obsession with a particular personality like Mullah Omar. I mean, Mullah Omar was not a known figure 7-8 years ago. It was just an icon of a Taliban movement. I mean, and so there is a need on the part of U.S. authorities to show some flexibility in their stance. And without showing such flexibility, there is no chance of any further political solution of this issue.
I just have one more question for you. Often, one of the most forgot about elements of war are the refugees. You mentioned also in your article that more than 2 million Afghan refugees who fled from the American and British-led bombing campaign are now returning to Afghanistan or have returned to Afghanistan. Can you speak about the reality of these refugees returning? How is that changing the political landscape in Afghanistan? And also, what types of conditions are these refugees returning to? What are the human rights that these refugees do or do not have?
There are twofold observations in this regard. First, the refugees to whom I mentioned in this article are the people who took refuge in mostly in the communist countries. And they were former communist people who took refuge in Russia and Central Asian republics and other countries. And they are the people who are mostly returning to Afghanistan. This is not going to serve, I mean, this is not a sign of, I mean, to me, it is not a sign of any stabilization or peace in Afghan society, but instead, those elements who are returning to Afghanistan would further create controversies and fuss in the Afghan society because, you know, in past also there was a difference between the rural and urban Afghans. The rurals are, as the entire world knows now, that they are the traditional people, and people say that they are religious, but I call them more traditional. And more rigid in their traditions, rather. And the urban people are in the Afghan society are very open, and most of the people were associated with two communist, with the communist parties, with the two factions of communist parties that were Khalq and Parcham. So when these people will be coming back, they will be rather source of political turmoil rather than any other thing. Similarly, there are refugees which are in big numbers, these refugees are stationed mostly in Pakistan. These are Pashtuns basically, and approximately the numbers are more than 3 million official figures suggest that there are more than 3 million in Pakistani camps. I visited recently the Jalozai camp, which is just 50-60 miles away from Afghan, Pak-Afghan border. It is in Pakistan. And I talked to the UNCHR people and the Pakistani officials, and they told me that these people generally go to Afghanistan in summers because they are not used to the hot weather, Pakistani hot weather. So during the hot weather, they leave Pakistan, and during winters, they come back. So generally, because the reason why they do not permanently dwell in their country is that there is no source of there are no jobs, agriculture left in Afghanistan because of a lot of bombardment first place by USSR, former USSR, and now by United States of America. The soil is no more capable to produce any agriculture, crops. There's just a lot of barren lands in Afghanistan. There is no infrastructure left in most of the cities like Jalalabad and Kandahar. So they generally prefer to stay in Pakistan. Though they go to their home country aside from the weather reasons, there is some affection because of that. They visit their country, but since their bread and butter is available in Pakistan, they have their houses in the camps. So they generally, there is no permanent solution of refugees in Pakistan that they can go back to their countries. They can go back to their country of origin. So these are the ground realities. As far as human rights are concerned, I never visited Kabul or any major Afghan city in recent days, so I cannot make a statement, but you know that there is Northern Alliance. At present, Northern Alliance is in power in Kabul, and most of the real estate is in the occupation of the people who belongs to the north of Afghanistan, who speaks Dari. There is no room left for the Pashto-speaking people. So in general, we can safely say that the people who come back to the country of origin and they belong to the northern part of the country have some basic rights and human rights right now under the present Karzai administration. But those who belong to the Pashtun belt and south of the country generally do not enjoy the basic rights, civil, human, whatever you can call them. So this is the situation on ground, what I gather.
You've been listening to an interview with Saeed Salim Shahzad, a journalist for the Asia Times, who recently published an article outlining current negotiations taking place in Afghanistan between United States military and intelligence officials and Taliban leadership. Negotiations which have been brought forward due to the escalating guerrilla war being waged on U.S. troops stationed in the country. You can access the article online at www.attimes.com. This interview was produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stefan Christophe.